We're on Heyman Bays, four lines up from the bottom, beginning the new Mishnah. This Mishnah reports the six practices of the people of Yericho, and one of them, as we'll see, was an apparent violation of the halacha we've been discussing, that from midday and on the 14th of Nisan, Erev Pesach, it's prohibited to do melacha. That is, we learned in all places, from after midday, Erev Pesach has status that's similar to Chol HaMoed, so certainly producing something professionally would be proscribed, and especially if the melacha in question isn't needed for the festival. The Mishnah relates, Shisha Dvarim Asu Anshi Yericho. The people of Yericho had six practices, all of which were objectionable. However, Al Shlosha Michu B'Yadam, the Chachamim only actually objected to three of the practices, Val Shlosha L'Michu B'Yadam. But the Rabbanim did not object to the other three, which were violations, which were deserious, and potentially had some kind of halachic basis. So the Rabbanim, picked their battles and did not protest those three practices of the Anshei Yericho. And the Mishnah now enumerates, Ve'elu hein shelo michu biyadam. These are the three practices of the Anshei Yericho that did not elicit an overt condemnation of the Rabbanan. First, markivin dekolim kol hayom. They would graft their palm trees throughout the entire day of Erev Pesach of the 14th of Nisan, in apparent violation of that halacha. The Gemara will further elaborate. And secondly, v'karchin es shema. They would, so to speak, wrap the shema. That is, the way they would recite the Kriya Shema was not in the halachically preferred manner, as the Gemara will describe further. And v'kotzer v'gotcher lifnei ha'omer, that their practice was that they would reap and stack that produce they reaped before the offering of the carbon omer that's brought on the 16th of Nisan, and ostensibly that was very problematic. For the Torah states that it's only upon the bringing of the omer offering that then erashis ketzircham, the first of your reaping, will become permitted. This language implies a prohibition to reap produce before the omer is brought. But in fact, the Anshei Yericho's action here did not violate that prohibition. And that is because the named prohibition applies only to reaping produce which would be fit for the omer offering itself. And thus, being that Yericho is in a valley, and the produce there is therefore not fit for the omer offering, it's considered inferior. Their act of reaping grain in Yericho was not a violation whatsoever. And in fact, Rashi asserts that we should delete this word kotzer from the Mishnah, because that particular act was not a violation whatsoever. However, their act of stacking up the produce did violate a rabbinic decree against doing so. So people should not inadvertently eat some of the stacked up grain. So that Yericho violated that halacha, and yet the violation wasn't serious enough for the Rabbanan to actually go and reprimand the Anshei Yericho for that. The Mishnah now enumerates Ve'ilu Shemicho B'yadam. These were the practices of the Anshei Yericho that the Rabbanan actually protested to. First, that Matirin Gamzio Shel Hekdesh. Anshei Yericho permitted themselves to derive personal benefit from branches that grew from trees that had been consecrated for the Beis HaMikdash. The Rabbanan protested against this clear-cut violation, not to benefit of something that is considered property of the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara will explain why the Anshei Yericho thought it was permitted. The Anshei Yericho would permit themselves to eat from fruit that had fallen from a tree on Shabbos. The Gemara will explain further. The Anshei Yericho would give Peah, the section, the portion that is left for the poor from the vegetables they grew. When in reality, the mitzvah peah does not apply to vegetables. Now you'll say, how could that be a problem? They give charity when they're not required to. The answer is that something that is truly peah is exempt from the tithing obligations, which means that the Anshei Yericho would give this quote-unquote peah to the aniyim, and the poor people would assume that, okay, it's peah, I don't need to tithe it, when in reality, there was a tithing requirement. So it's causing the aniyim to eat tevel, untithed produce. In addition, it's stealing from the recipients who were entitled to those tithes, like, for example, the Levium, who had a claim to Maaser Rishon, and now they're not receiving that. And so, in response to these three practices, Umichu B'yadim Chachamim, the Chachamim issued a condemnation. Where it begins with the Braisa that teaches a list that's structurally similar to the list in our Mishnah. Tan Rabbanan, the Rabbanan, Tan Nebraisa, Shisha Dvarim, Asa Chizkiyah HaMelech. Chizkiyah HaMelech did six things, Al Shlosha Hodulo. Three of them the Rabbanan agreed with. So it's not only that they didn't protest the actions, in this case they actually approved of what he did. Al Shlosha Lahodulo. But the Chachamim did not approve of the other three of these six. The Braisa now enumerates. First thing Chizkiyah HaMelech did was a Gerer Atzmas Aviv Al Mita Shel Chavalim. He dragged the remains of his wicked father, Achaz HaMelech, on a bed of ropes to purposely dishonor the memory of his father, who was a king who was steeped in Avodah Zarah and purposely tried to turn people away from Hashem. And to this, Chizkiyah hoped to achieve some kind of a kapara for his father, as well as to sanctify Hashem's name, to show a disgrace for a person like Achaz who had led his life as a thoroughly wicked person. And Vahodulo, the Rabbanan approved of this. And Kites Nechash and Nechoshes, Chizkiyah Melech crushed the copper snake that had been fashioned by Moshe Rabbeinu. It's related in Parshas Chukas to put an end to the plague Hashem had sent of the poisonous snakes attacking Bnei Yisrael. So Moshe Rabbeinu made this copper snake. And the way it functioned was that people would look up at the snake and they would remind them to look up toward heaven and daven to Hashem to save them. And that successfully put an end to the plague. They still had this copper snake in the time of Chizkiyah HaMelech, but people by that time had forgotten the true purpose of the copper snake. They began to believe that the snake itself had some kind of independent power, so they began to worship it as an idol. So Chizkiyah HaMelech decided to destroy it, v'hodulo, and the Chachamim agreed with that decision. And further, Gana Sefer Refuos. Chizkiyah HaMelech made the decision to hide the Book of Remedies, which had a cure for every illness that allowed people to easily heal themselves from all kinds of illnesses. Chizkiyah HaMelech saw that this led people to miss the point of why they got sick in the first place, which was to humble them and turn to Hashem. He therefore decided to hide the book. V'hodulo, and the Chachamim agreed with that decision as well. The Braisa continues, V'al shlosha lo hodulo. Rabbanan did not approve of the following three decisions of Chizkiyah HaMelech. First of all, that kitzitz the lasa shel heichal v'shugan lemelech Ashur. The Melech of Ashur told Chizkiyah HaMelech that he would only remove his armies from the land of Yehuda for a very heavy tax that we didn't have the money for. He went and cut down the doors to the Beis HaMikdash and sent them to Melech Ashur to pay the tax. Velo hodulo. The Chachamim did not agree with that decision. They apparently felt that this should have been accomplished some other way, and not taking the doors of the Beis HaMikdash itself. And further, Sasa Megichon HaElyon Velo hodulo. Chizkiyah HaMelech decided to stop up the waters of the upper Gichon, the Gichon River, as a way to cut off the water supply to Asher's army, which was about to besiege Yerushalayim. But the Chachamim did not agree with this decision, for they felt this action was not needed, since Hashem had promised Chizkiyah HaMelech that he would protect the city. So the Chachamim felt this was a lack of faith. He should have just trusted Hashem will protect. And finally, Iver Nisan ben Nisan, Chizkiyah HaMelech, shortly after the death of his father Achaz, and Pesach was approaching, Chizkiyah HaMelech realized there's a problem, that there are plenty of people who are still defiled, still have tum on them, because they had been worshipping idols, and they won't be able to come pure in time for Pesach. So Chizkiyah HaMelech decided to decree that year a leap year. Back and before we had established a fixed calendar, the Beis Din made a decision as far as whether to add a month to make it a leap year, which is necessary ever so often to keep our lunar calendar synchronized with the solar calendar, so that you don't have Pesach in the middle of winter. So it used to be that Beis Din would decide on a year-to-year basis whether to make that year a leap year. So in order to delay Pesach that year, so that the Jews would be able to bring Korban Pesach, Chizkiyah HaMelech decreed that year should be a leap year. The problem was that he did so after Nisan had already started. And so V'lo hodulo, the Chachamim did not agree with that decision. From their understanding, and that was against the rules, you can only add a second Adar before Nisan has already commenced. Our Mishnah described how the Anshei Yericho were markivin the kolam kol hayom. They would graft palm trees throughout the entire day of the 14th of Nisan. The Gemara inquires, Hechi Avdi, what exactly they did? What does this mean? They would graft the trees. Amar Rav Yudah Yehuda said, it means, Maisi Asa Dara Vishukha Didafna. They would take this formula made from fresh myrtle and juice from the barrels of a laurel tree, Vikimcha Desare Derami Bimana Delochavia Learbin Yamin, and also some barley flour that was kept in a vessel less than 40 days from when the barley was ground. All of these would be boiled together, then injected into the heart of a palm tree. And apparently this is provided with important nutrients that enable the tree to much more effectively absorb nourishment, such that any other tree standing within 4 amos of a tree that had been injected with this formula, if the nearby tree had not received a similar injection, it would wither, it wouldn't grow properly, it wouldn't be able to compete with the heightened absorbing powers of the tree that did receive the injection. So Rav Yehuda says that's what's meant in the Mishnah by this language of they would graft the tree. It was an act of grafting in the sense that they took ingredients from another plant, your myrtle, and that was part of the formula that they injected this palm tree with. That's what they would continue doing throughout the 14th of Nisan. We have a different opinion. Rav Acha bar de Rava Omar, Rav Rava says that what the Mishnah means when it says that Shiricha would graft all day long on the 14th, is that manchi kufra dicha denuk vasa. They would take young shoots from palm trees and make an opening in some of the larger branches and insert the young shoot into the larger branch to promote further growth. Or it means that they would take some softer branches from male palm trees, insert those into female palm trees. The male ones produce fruit, the female ones don't. By grafting the male tree into the female one, now the female one would produce fruit. In any case, the act here of the Anshei Richo appears to be a clear-cut violation of the halacha that the person may not do melacha after midday on the 14th. But the Meiri explains that the Anshei Richo made the argument that they're doing this in Yericho, they're not in Yerushalayim bringing Korban Pesach. Therefore, the halacha didn't pertain to them, whereas the Chachamim felt it's still objectionable to do melacha. You know, even if a person's not bringing Korban Pesach, let's say nowadays, and Korban Pesach, still, it's not proper to do melacha after midday on the 14th. But this violation didn't rise to the level of eliciting an actual protest by the Rabbanon. The next practice mentioned by the Mishnah was that v'karchin es shema, they would, so to speak, wrap the shema. The Gemara explains, hechi avdi, in what way would they wrap the shema? What was the issue here? Amar Rav Yehuda, Rav Yehuda explains that it means, omrim shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. They would begin the Shema recital with the first pasuk of Shema, and would then proceed to the following passage. It begins, V'ohavta v'lohoy mafsikin, without making sure to make a separation between the last word of the first pasuk, Echad, and the first word of the first paragraph of the Shema, of V'ohavta, when in fact, the appropriate thing to do is draw out the last word, Echad, and thereby make a kind of separation between the pasuk of Shema Yisrael and the following pasuk. And the reason that's important is because we're doing fundamentally different things from one pasuk to the next. With the pasuk of Shema, we're accepting the yoke of heaven and declaring the oneness of Hashem. Whereas in the psukim that follow, it's more of just a recital of some of our fundamental obligations to Hashem. So some kind of separation is warranted. The word below will mention that, of course, we insert the Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso L'Olam Va'et. But here we're speaking about a requirement to draw out Echad so that we acknowledge a shift in tone from what we're doing with Shema Yisrael and what we're continuing with the following paragraph of Ve'ohavta. Shiricha wouldn't do that, so that was objectionable, though not to the degree that the Rabbanon, when it actually protested their practice. Or brings another opinion of what it means. Rava Omar, Rava said, Mafsikin Hayim. And that wasn't the issue. And Shiricha did properly indicate a separation between the first pasuk and the second pasuk. Ela shehayu omrim hayom alav avecha. They recited a later pasuk of the Shema, the pasuk which states shehayu advar ma'ila shonachim etzavecha yom alav avecha. It means, let these things that I command you about today be upon your heart. The Anshi Richo would make any kind of pause between the word Hayom and the next words Alav Avecha, Dimashma Hayom Alav Avecha V'lo Machar Alav Avecha, with the result that the recital could be construed as saying that the Hashem says, I command you today about these things, but not tomorrow. The word now brings a Braisa which discusses this topic, Tana Rabbanan, the Rabbanan Tana Braisa, Ketzad Hayu Karchen Es Shema, in what way would the Anshi Richo wrap the Shema improperly together? First opinion of the Braisa states, Omrim Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad V'lo Hayu Mafsikin. The issue was that they did not adequately make a separation between the last word of the first pasuk and the first word of the following one of Ve'ahavta. Just as the Amar of Yehuda described above, the Rebbe Meir. This is the opinion of Rebbe Meir. However, Rebbe Yehuda Omer, Yehuda says, no, that wasn't the issue. Mafsikin Hayu. They did mark a separation between the first and second pasuk of the Shema. Ela shelo hayu omrim baruch shem kavod malchuso le'olam vad. Rather, the problem is that they did not recite the words baruch shem kavod malchuso le'olam vad, blessed is the name of his glorious kingdom forever, between the first and second psukim of the Shema, as they are presented in the Torah. So clearly Rabbi Yehuda is saying that we're supposed to mention this phrase, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso L'Olam Va'ed, between the first and second psukim of the Shema. But that raises the question, V'anan my time arminan lay. Why, in fact, are we supposed to recite this phrase that's not part of the actual Shema passage in the Torah? The Gemara explains, K'edarish Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, it's as was darshan by Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Dear Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, for he darshans as follows. Pasuk in Vayechi relates how Vayikra Yaakov al Bana Vayomer Heosfu Vagida Lachem. Yaakov Avinu called for his sons and asked them, gather together, for I shall tell you what will befall you. It says there, Va'achar Seyamim, at the end of days. So apparently, Bikish Yaakov Legalus the Bana of Ketz Ayamin. Yaakov Avinu sought to reveal to the Shvatim, to his sons, the time when the exile would finally and completely end, the time when Hashem would no longer would withhold his right hand from aiding Bnei Israel in battle. In other words, Yaakov Avinu wanted to reveal the dates of the final redemption to his sons, but he was prevented from doing so. For the Shechina, when Yaakov wanted to reveal this to them, departed from Yaakov Avinu, making it impossible for him to reveal this. And when this happened, Omar Shema Chas V'Shalom Yesh B'Mitasi P'sol, Yaakov Avinu became gravely concerned that perhaps, heaven forbid, there is among my sons one who isn't worthy, Kevram Shiyatzi B'Menu Yishmal, like Yishmal, who came from my grandfather Avraham, V'Yavi Yitzchak Shiyatzi B'Menu Esav, and this happened with my father as well, for from him came Esav. So perhaps, unbeknownst to me, I have a son who doesn't firmly believe in Hashem, and that's why Hashem doesn't want me to reveal the time of the final redemption to them. In response to this concern, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. The sons of Yaakov declared the pasuk Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, declaring their full and total belief in the oneness of Hashem. But through these words, they were saying to Yaakov Avinu that Keshem She'im B'Libcha LeEchad, just as in your heart, there is only the one Hashem that's 100% clear to you, kach ein b'libeinu l'echad, in our hearts it is the same. Osa Shah, Pasach Yaakov Avinu V'yam, in response to this, Yaakov Avinu joyfully declared, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso L'Olam Va'ed, blessed is the name of his glorious kingdom forever. Now, Amri Rabbanan, Hechi Navet, the Rabbanan said to themselves, what do we do here? This presents a dilemma. On the one hand, Nimru, if we institute that for all time, Bnei Yisrael should emulate this response of their forefather, of Yisrael of Yaakov, how he responded to the Shvatim's recital of Shema with Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso L'Olam Va'ed, if this is to be included in Kriya Shema for all time, The problem with that is, Lo Amru Moshe Rabbeinu. It was never stated by Moshe Rabbeinu. In the Torah itself, of course, we don't find this language inserted between the first and second psukim of Shema. On the other hand, Lo Nimru, doesn't seem proper to simply not include this phrase in the Shema for Amr Yaakov. Yaakov Avinu himself did say this in response to the pasuk of Shema Yisrael. So how should we proceed here? The Torah tells us, Hiskinu she'omrim oso b'chashai. The compromise was, the Rabbanan instituted, that we should recite Baruch Shem Kvod Melechus Olam Va'ed after the first pasuk of Shema, but quietly. So this way we're acknowledging that the phrase isn't from the parsha of the Shema itself, and yet we do at the same time acknowledge the fact that Yaakov Avinu said this phrase by reciting that quietly. And the Gemara illustrates this with a parable. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Amri Debei Rabbi Ami. Rabbi Yitzchak said that the Rabbanan of Yeshiva Rabbi Ami gave a mashal. He said, mashal lebas melech she'richat sikei kedera. It's like a princess who takes in the aroma of a delicious stew. And so she has a desire for that stew, but this puts her in a bind. For im tomar yesh la ganai. If she speaks up and says, so I'd like some of that stew, that would be unbecoming of the princess. At the same time, lo tomar yesh la tsar. If she doesn't ask for some of the stew, then it'll be like suffering. She has a real craving for the stew, and she just has to stand there, you know, smelling this delicious food, and unable to ask for some of it. And so what could be a way out of the problem? If her servants are attentive and they notice, they discern what's going on, her servants will discreetly bring her some of the stew. So her craving for that will be fulfilled, and at the same time, no embarrassment will be caused to the princess. So Rabbanan solved the problem here in a similar way. It is by having us recite the Baruch Shem Kvod Melechus Olam Va'ed in Kriya Shema discreetly. Rabbi brings another comment about this. Rabbi Yabo. Rabbi Yabo said, "Hiskinu shiyu omrim oso bekol ram mipnei tarum esaminin." At a later point, Chazal decided that we should recite Baruch Shem Kvod Melechus Olam Va'ed out loud. We shouldn't whisper it anymore because of the accusations of the heretics when they observed that we would quietly recite another pasuk, accused us of adding some kind of a suspect extra phrase into the Shema to fit their narrative. Therefore, we should now say Baruch Shem Kvod Melechus Olam Va'ed out loud to openly display that we are following the tradition that was instituted by Chazal to add this phrase. However, he states, "Ben Harda Deleke Minin." In Harda, where we don't have this problem of the heretics, Atash Tamrila B'Chashai, they continue until this day to quietly recite the Baruch Shem phrase in the Shema, which indeed is still the custom, except on Yom Kippur. And the poskim explained that one possible reason for that is a different explanation of the origin of Baruch Shem Kvod Melechus Olam Va'ed. The Moshe Rabbeinu overheard it from the Malachim. So we, like, so to speak, you stole it from the Malachim, and we ourselves recite this phrase. So throughout the year, we say it quietly because we're not Malachim. But since on Yom Kippur we're elevated to the level of Malachim, we do recite the Baruch Shem out loud then. It continues with the Braisa that discusses the practices of the Anshei Yericho. Tana Rabbanan, the Rabbanan Tana, the Braisa. Shisha Dvarim Osim Anshei Yericho. The Anshei Yericho practiced 6 things. Shlosha Bratzon Chachamim. 3 were in accordance with the wishes of the Chachamim. So as it will be noted, seems to be saying that there was no problem whatsoever with the first 3 practices. Shlosha Shalom Bratzon Chachamim. And they did 3 things that were not in accordance with the wishes of the Chachamim. And the Tanya now enumerates, Ve'eglu Bratzon Chachamim, following 3 things that Anshei Yericho did were in accordance with the Chachamim's wishes. First of all, that Markivin Dekolim Akolayom, they would graft their palm trees as described above throughout the entire day of the 14th of Nisan. Ve'karchin Es Shema, they would wrap together the Shema. We had the discussion above about what that means. Ve'kotzen Lifnei Ha'omer, and they would reap their grain that was grown in Yericho before the Omer offering was brought. We explained above why that's not a problem. For the prohibition to reap grain before the Omer only applies to grain that's fit to be used for the Omer, which is not the case of the grain grown in Yericho. And Rabbi Meir continues that, Ve'elu shalom ratzon chachamim. These were the things that Yericho did that were not in accordance with the wishes of the chachamim. First, that gochin lishnei ha'omer, they would even stack the grain they reaped before the Omer offering was brought. And as explained above, There's a rabbinic decree against doing that, lest the person actually eat from the grain before the Omer, which would be strictly prohibited. That would be a violation of Chadash. And the second thing was that reports in Peratzos Beginu Seinu Mepardo Sehen L'achal Neshel Aniyem Mishneh Betzaros Meshabos V'yam Tovim. They would make openings in the fences to their gardens and orchards to allow the poor people to enter, to take from fruits that fell from the trees, even on Shabbos and Yom Tov. That, as the Gemara will explain, is problematic. They also permitted the use of branches of their carob and sycamore trees, even though those trees had once been consecrated for the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara will further discuss the exact issue there. These are the words of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda objects to Rabbi Meir. If, as you're saying here, these first three actions of the Anshei Richa were in accordance with the wishes of the Chachamim, well then why are we talking about specifically Anshei Richa did this, as if there's some kind of controversy here? Let all people do these things. And so Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with Rabbi Meir's description and says, Ella Elu ve'elu shelo b'ratzon Chachamim yo'osin. Both sets of actions were against the wishes of the Chachamim. The only difference between the sets is that al shloshim michu biyadam, three of them elicited an actual protest of the Chachamim, v'al shloshim lo michu biyadam, the other three actions, while halachically problematic, were not problematic enough to elicit a protest from the Chachamim. V'yelu shelo michu biyadam. And these are the three actions that didn't cause the Rabbanan to actually go and rebuke the Anshei Richa for. First of all, markivin de kolam kol yom, their practice of grafting their palm trees through the entire day of the 14th of Nisan, v'karchin es shema, and for wrapping the shema. And here he differs regarding the description of one of these actions. He says, v'kotrin v'godshin lifnei ha'omer, and for the fact that they would not only reap, but also stack the grain before the omer offering was brought. Rabbi Yehuda is saying that though this was problematic, as we explained above, this wasn't problematic enough to elicit a rebuke from the Rabbanan. V'yelu shemichu biyadam. The Rabbanan did rebuke the Anshei Richa over the following three things. First, the matir gamzio shel hegdesh shachor v'shal shikma, the Anshei Richa's practice of deriving personal benefit from branches which grew from trees that had at one point been consecrated for the Beis HaMikdash. And for reports in Pratzos, Beginosein and Pratisehen, Lachal Neshalaniyam, Shabbosavim Tovim, Mishnei Bitsaras. And for the fact that Anshei Richa left openings for the poor to come and take fallen fruit during years of famine, Yehuda is saying that this was bad enough to elicit rebuke from the Rabbanan. And third, Nosnin Peah Liyarak, Anshei Richa designated a portion of a Peah for the poor of their vegetables. This, as explained above, was also very problematic. So umichu biyadim chachamim. In response to these three, the chachamim did rebuke the Anshei Richa. One asks a question: V'savar Reb Yehuda ketzira shelo b'ratzon chachamim hi? Is it actually the opinion of Reb Yehuda that the act of Anshei Richa of reaping the grain before the omer offering, grain of Yericho, was problematic? Forget that was Reb Yehuda's whole point, was to say that it must be that all of these actions were problematic on some level. The Gemara notes that one of the practices Rabbi Yehuda included in the list was that they would reap and stack. So he did mention the act of reaping, which apparently means that Rabbi Yehuda is saying that that act of reaping their grain before the Omer offering was problematic. The Gemara points out, V'atanan, I relearn in the Mishnah and Menachos, that Anshei Richa kotzen lifnei ha'omer b'ratzon chachamim. Mishnah specifically states the opposite, that the Anshei Richa's practice of reaping grain before the Omer offering was in accordance with the Chachamim's wishes. For as explained above, the issue of reaping grain before the Omer offering doesn't apply to grain that can't be used for the Omer offering, which is the case of the grain of Yericho. Because Yericho is in a valley that's not fit for the Omer offering. Mishnah then states, V'godshin lifnei ha'omer shelo b'ratzon chachamim. That Yericho's practice of also stacking their grain before the Omer offering was against the wishes of the Chachamim. Yet, v'lomichu biyadim chachamim, the Chachamim didn't rebuke them for that. So this Mishnah again is stating that the action of the Anshei Richa of reaping their grain before the Omer offering was not problematic on any level. Turning to Amid Beis, the Gemara notes, Man shamas le diyamar michu velo michu. Who is the Tana? Which stresses the same point that the Mishnah Menachos did, namely this point of you could have an action which is problematic, but not enough to elicit protest from the Chachamim, Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda and the Braisa focused on that same point. So presumably the Mishnah Menachos is in accordance with the Tana Rabbi Yehuda. Uketani kotzer b'ritzon chachamim. What does the Mishnah there state? That the Anshei Yericho's practice of reaping grain before the Omer offering was in accordance with the Chacham's wishes. It wasn't wrong whatsoever. That seems to then contradict the words of Rabbi Yehuda in the Braisa, where he implies that the reaping too was problematic. The Gemara responds by pointing out, Uletaymeich, according to your understanding, the Braisa indeed means to separately count the act of reaping the grain before the Omer as another problematic practice of the Anshei Yericho. We may raise a different question, the one just raised, which is Hani Arbave. We actually have four practices within this group, whereas the Braisa told us that this is a group of just three. So even aside from this issue that was raised, that there seems to be a contradiction between the Mishnah and the Braisa, there's support for the conclusion that Elisami Mikan Ketzira. We must delete from the text of the Braisa the word Ketzira. So that all Rabbi Yehuda was saying in the Braisa was that the act of stacking the grain before the Omer offering was problematic, for there's a rabbinic decree that we're not supposed to do that. It might lead people to actually eat some of the Chadash produce, eat some of that produce before it's been permitted by the Chadash offerings. The fact that the produce itself is not fit to be brought as the Omer offering has no impact on the prohibition against eating from the new crop before the Omer offering is brought. So that act was indeed problematic. The other practice of the Anshei Yericho that earned them a rabbinic rebuke was that Umatirin Gamzias Shel Hegdesh Shel Chor V'Shel Shikma. They would permit branches of carob and sycamore trees that had been consecrated for the Beis HaMikdash for their personal use. The Gemara explains what the thinking of the Anshei Yericho was. Omru, they argued, Avosenu Lo Gedishu Ala Karos. Yes, our forefathers, the story that will be related tomorrow, they'd consecrate the trees themselves, the trunks of these carob and sycamore trees. But we're allowed to permit the use of new branches, like they would prune the trees, and new branches related. These are totally new branches. So Anshei Yericho assumed that they are not prohibited. So they went and used those. Gemara further elaborates, so again, we're dealing with growths that came about later. So meaning, a generation ago, say, the trees themselves were consecrated. But at this point, we're dealing with completely new branches. There was a dispute, essentially, between the Chachamim and Anshei Yericho regarding the halachic status of such branches. Anshei Yericho adopted the position that holds the very strict status called Mi'ila that applies to something which has been consecrated for the Beis HaMikdash doesn't extend to a new growth from the thing that was originally consecrated. But Rabbanan Savri, the Rabbanan held here that even assuming the correctness of the above-mentioned opinion, Nihi de Mi'ila Leka, well, granted, fine, there is an opinion which holds that the particular status called Mi'ila, which has a very specific consequences if somebody violates that and illegally benefits from something that's consecrated and has Mi'ila status, well, that status perhaps doesn't apply to the new growth, Yisura Mi'ika, but a basic prohibition, regardless, will apply to even the new growth. The fact is, this is a growth that comes from something that's Mi'ila, that's consecrated for the Beis HaMikdash. So the new growth, too, is definitely prohibited. So you're dealing with a biblical violation, therefore, the Rabbanan intervened and told Anshei Yericho this has to stop. The Raisa described the second very problematic practice of Anshei Yericho, that they would leave openings in their garden, orchard fences, to allow the poor to come in and take the fallen fruit, even on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Where explains the issue here, Amar Ulam Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, he first clarifies which specific fruits we're discussing here. Machlokas b'sham achbedos. The dispute, Anshei Yericho versus the Chachamim, concerns the fruits that didn't fall away to the ground, but were caught in the upper branches of the palm tree. And the two viewpoints here were as follows. The Rabbanan Savri, Gazrin and Shemiyala V'yitlosh. The Rabbanan were of the opinion that you're allowing people to climb up the tree to get the fruit, the upper branches, is strictly forbidden out of a concern that in the course of climbing the tree on Shabbos or Yom Tov, the person would be tempted to go and pick some more dates that are actually attached to the tree, which of course would be a biblical violation. Whereas V'anshi Yericho Savri lo gazrin and shem yala v'yitlosh, and she Yericho were of the opinion that no, there's no such decree. They didn't think there was a problem here, even though the truth is there's an explicit Mishnah in Beitzah which says it's prohibited for a person to climb or even use in any way a tree on Shabbos or Yom Tov because he might break off a branch. V'anshi Yericho thought that that's not a problem, apparently. Shlakish clarifies, Avol b'shel b'in akipin, but with regards to dates that were caught in the lower branches of the palm tree, Divrei Kol Mutter, according to all opinions, even though Rabbanan would agree, it's not a problem for the person to reach for those detached dates, doesn't entail climbing up the tree, and there's no concern he's going to then go and see attached dates. It's much further up. We don't have to worry that as he's taking the dates that are caught in the lower part that he's going to go climb up and pick some attached dates. So says Rish Lakish, Amar Lei Rava. Rava objected to Ulo. How could you say that the actual halacha rules that dates that fell on Shabbos or Yom Tov were caught in the lower branches of the tree are permitted? Vaha muktas ninhu. Aye, they should be deemed as mukta. This is, it should be classified as set aside and prohibited for use on Shabbos or Yom Tov, even to move, due to the fact that at the onset of Shabbos or Yom Tov, they were still attached to the tree. And of course, at that stage, they were prohibited. You're not allowed to pick a fruit on Shabbos or Yom Tov. And the way Muktzah works is that whatever the status of the item in question was at the onset of Shabbos or Yom Tov, that gets locked in for the entire Shabbos. Therefore, even once the dates fell into the lower branches, they should remain Muktzah. And the question assumes that there's no permissible way to use dates that are attached to the tree. Hence, again, it triggers the status of Muktzah Machmas Isser. It was certainly set aside then. It was Asr to use then. So that should remain a problem throughout the entire Shabbos. Rava says, V'chitem, and if you'll try and answer by suggesting the Hovel, the Chazi, Le Orvin, that you might argue that even when the dates were still attached, they weren't Muktzah. For it wasn't uncommon, at least among the wealthy, for them to own ravens. And so, could make the case that a person has a use for dates attached to the tree, namely, to have his raven eat some dates from there. So if we assume that the Anshei Yericho were raven owners, they had ravens as pets, well then we could argue that the dates in question are not muktzah, since from the very beginning of Shabbos, the person in question kept open the possibility of using the dates as they were at the time, attached to the tree, i.e. as food for his pet raven. However, Rava seeks to reject such a theory by arguing, Hashta muchan lo adam lo havi muchan lo kalavim. If we don't endorse such an argument, even in a situation where we're dealing with an item that started out as fit for the person's use, but then later, in the middle of Shabbos, was only useful as food for his dogs, as we will now see, we rule that the item is muktzah in that type of a case, titnan, as is clear from the Mishnah in Shabbos, which discusses the status of an animal, a kosher animal that was alive coming into Shabbos, but then died, became an avela in the middle of Shabbos. So that means we're dealing with an animal which was fit for human consumption at the beginning of Shabbos. So essentially, you know, the person doesn't take his mind off of it. He has a use for himself for it. So he's not hiksedaita. He doesn't set aside the thing in his mind at the beginning of Shabbos. Upon the animal's death, well, now it's not kosher, of course. The only thing he uses it for now is to feed it to his dogs. So what's the ruling in such a case? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im lo hoisa nevela meir of Shabbos asura. Since it was not a nevela at the beginning of Shabbos, it wasn't fit as dog food at the beginning of Shabbos, it's prohibited right now, in spite of the fact that technically it could be used as dog food, fisha eina min hamuchan. For such a case, it's not considered prepared for Shabbos use, but rather is considered muktzah. So what is this Mishnah saying to us? This Mishnah is saying to us that even though starting out, there was a very strong basis to argue that this shouldn't be mukta, i.e. that it was fit for the person himself, yet upon the development of the animal dying, becoming an avela on Shabbos, it now is deemed to be mukta. For we say the person, at the beginning of Shabbos, did not anticipate this. He wasn't planning that, oh, if the animal should die, I'll feed it to my dog. That was never the plan. Therefore, upon becoming an animal carcass, it's mukta. Rav argues, if that's true, well then, mukhala arvim, mavi mukhala adam? Is it possible to argue that when even the beginning status is relatively weak, the argument here is, oh, he can use the dates for his pet raven, but that's not even for his own use. And you want to suggest that because of that factor, once the dates fall out of the tree, we should say they're not mukta, by arguing that because there was some kind of a usage available to him at the beginning of Shabbos, he had this in mind, in the back of his mind, you know, if the dates will fall, he'll use that for himself. Can such an argument be made in light of with this mission Shabbos we just quoted states? Amrle Ula replies to Rava in, yes, we could make such an argument. For while the mission there in Shabbos does establish the Muchen La'adam Lo'avi Muchen La'kalavim, that where the order is, initially this animal was fit for the person's use, but later became fit only for dog food to feed to his animal. The ruling is that item is considered mukta, it's forbidden for use. The kolmidi the chazi leinish lomaksale midaite. Because if you're talking about a use that is not for himself, it's for his animal, that's not the kind of thing that a person will anticipate. He'll plan and say, well, maybe this will end up being a carcass, then I'll feed it to my dog. That's not on the radar, whereas muchala orvim havi muchala adam. In the case here is actually a very strong argument to make, which is that the first step we say is that these dates inherently are human food. Now, they happen to be attached. To deal with the problem that they're attached, we say, well, okay, he still has like more of an indirect usage. He could have his raven eat the dates, even in their current state. When that is the situation, there is a compelling argument to make that once the dates fall, they shouldn't be considered mukta. And that is, the point that when you're dealing with a usage that ultimately is for the person himself, that is the kind of thing that the person will anticipate. And he'll plan, he'll think in his mind that in case these dates should fall, I'm not separating them from myself psychologically. So in other words, he mentally prepared them for potential use on Shabbos. That is a reasonable argument to make in the case of the dates. Hence, Rish Lakish above stated that the actual halacha with regards to the fallen dates in the lower part of the tree, where he's not going to have to go climbing the tree, are permitted. They're not mukta. The Gemara now presents a different version of Rish Lakish's explanation of the dispute here, the Chachamim and Anshi Yericho. That is, Kiyasa Ravin, Amar Rishim and Lakish and Ravin came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. He reported the following from Rish Lakish, that Machlokas Bishal Ben Kipin. In fact, the dispute here between Anshi Yericho and the Chachamim concerns the dates that fell and landed in the lower branches of the tree. The dispute is as follows. The Rabbanan Savri, Muchala Arvim Lohavi Muchala Adam. The Rabbanan disagree with the argument we just laid out above. They don't buy that argument that because the attached dates avoided the Muksa designation because you could use it as a food for a pet raven, that therefore, ultimately, when they fall, we could say, okay, the person planned for that, therefore, they're not mukta. The Rabbanan reject that argument, and they therefore say the dates are mukta. Whereas, Vanchi Yericho Savri, Mucha La'arvim, Havi Mucha La'adam. Yericho believed the argument that we laid out above, that argues that these dates should not be considered mukta. So that was the controversy here, Aval B'shal Mechabedos, with regards to the dates landed in the upper branches of the tree. Divrei HaKol Aser, all opinions, even Anshi Yericho would concede that it's prohibited to allow a Niyam to go and get those on Shabbos or Yom Tov, for Gazrin Hashem Yalav Yitlosh. The Rabbanan definitely did decree not to go up in a tree to get such dates, lest the person in the course of that pick some still attached dates on Shabbos or Yom Tov. The third action of the Enchiricha that earned the rabbinic rebuke was Venostin Pele Yarak. They would designate to pay a portion of their vegetables. The Gemara wonders how indeed the Enchiricha could have believed that this was not a problem. But less Lula Enchiricha Haditnan, did the Enchiricha not agree with the clear-cut teaching in the Mishnah Masechtas Peah? The Mishnah there teaches Klal Amru Bepeah, the Rabbanan stated a rule with regards to the obligation of Peah. They provided the criteria for that mitzvah to apply. That Kol Shehu Ochel must be produce that is edible in the conventional sense, Vinishmar, and that is protected by the owner. Vigidulam in Haaretz, it must actually derive its nourishment from the ground, Lekitoso Keachas, and it must be a type of produce which is gathered all at once, Umachniso Lekiyam, and it must be a type of produce which, once it's gathered in, it lasts a relatively long amount of time. A type of produce that meets all of those criteria is chayiv bepeah, is subject to the mitzvah of peah. The owner has to separate a portion of that and leave that for the poor. And again, as mentioned, that section will be exempt from the various tithing obligations. And the Gemara explains what each phrase of the Mishnah comes to teach. So first, koshu ochel, the phrase that the produce must be a regular, conventional kind of food. So this phrase comes prat lesfiche satis vikotz. It comes to exclude aftergrowth of safflower and woad, things which might, in theory, be edible but are not very edible. Things like that are not subject to pay. Further, vinishmar, the Mishnah's language that the produce must be guarded, prat lehefker, comes to exclude produce which has been left as ownerless. That isn't subject to peah. And the Mishnah's language, the vigidulum in haaretz, the produce must derive its nourishment from the ground. Prat comes to exclude the kmeinu patrios, truffles and mushrooms, which don't take root in the ground. And the Mishnah's language of lekitasan keachas has to be gathered all at once. Prat letein, this comes to exclude figs, which tends to ripen in a staggered way. You have one section which ripens, so you harvest that, and another section you harvest that. So that isn't subject to peah. Machnisa lekiyam, and the Mishnah's language that the produce must be something that lasts. Prat liyarak comes to exclude vegetables, which upon harvesting spoil relatively quickly. So we ask, did the Enchiricha not agree with the teaching of this Mishnah when they decided to apply the mitzvah peah to their vegetables? Mar answers, Amar of Yehuda, Marav, Hacha Barashi Fasas Askinan. The debate here between Enchiricha and the Chachamim concerns leaves of turnips. Meaning Enchiricha agreed that the actual vegetables, they wouldn't leave that as peah. They accepted that. The dispute was about leaves of turnips, and the issue is as follows. An issue is the question of the halachic status of something that is practically stored and lasts a long time through pickling, but only incidental to the main part that the person really is interested in storing, which is the turnip bulbs themselves. Because those are typically stored and they're pickled and they last a long time, the turnip bulbs are definitely subject to peah. But the question was, what about the leaves, which sometimes will accompany the turnip bulbs? Are they subject to peah? So that was the issue here. The opinions were Ma'asav Ramachnisu Lekimai De Davaracha Shmei Kiyam Shiricho, were of the understanding that even though the turnip leaves were only stored and pickled along with the actual bulbs, incidentally, they still get the same status as, okay, they're also considered something which lasts a long time and therefore is subject to peah. Umar Sarvalosh Mekiyim. Was the Rabbanan correcting the Chiricha of the Rabbanan rule? The leaves are not included because the person doesn't intend to actually store these. They're not interested in having those last. Just because they happen to also be stored with the turnip bulbs doesn't elevate them to the same status vis-a-vis peah. So the mitzvah peah doesn't apply, and therefore, again, as we explained, being that the mitzvah peah doesn't apply, it's a problem to, in practice, apply the lach of peah to those, and hence the Rabbanan reprimanded the Enchiricha for this. Where further discusses this issue, Tana Rabbanan, the Rabbanan, Tana Braisam, the very Shona, how you know, Sten Peah, Lelefes, Vela Kuruf. Before they were rebuked by the Chachamim, the Enchiricha would designate as peah the leaves of turnips and cabbage. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Afla Kaflon. Rabbi Yossi says, also, the leaves of leeks. So Rabbi Yossi seems to be saying that There's a controversy about all three of these. The leaves of turnips, cabbage, and leeks. Tanya Idach was taught in a different brisa. This other brisa, the first opinion states, Hayunostin Peyal Alefes Velakaflon. The Achirichah, before they were rebuked by the Chachamim, would designate as Peyah the leaves of turnips and leeks. So this seems to be some kind of a combination of the first opinion plus Rav Yossi of the previous brisa. The brisa continues, Rabbi Shimon Omar Af Lakrov. Also part of the controversy was the leaves of cabbage. So Rabbi Shimon seems to be saying that all three of these things were part of the controversy. Kimington and Zainam and Aleph, the Gemara proposes Neima Telasa Tanaihavu. At first blush, it would appear that between these two brisas, we have three different Tanaic positions. That is, we have the Tanakama, the first anonymous opinion of each brisa. Those are two different positions, apparently. Tanakama of brisa 1 says that the controversy was about leaves of turnips and cabbage, whereas Tanakama of brisa 2 says the controversy was about leaves of turnips and leeks, not cabbage. And then we have a third opinion, shared by Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, that the dispute was about all three, turnips, cabbage, and leeks. It seems like we have three opinions between these two brisos, but the Gemara says, lo, not necessarily. We could say that trei tenoihavu, that there are only two Tanaic opinions between these two brisos. For we may suggest that v'tanakama de Rabbi Shimon, hainu Rabbi Yossi, that the tanakama of Rabbi Shimon, of brisa 2, equals the opinion of Rabbi Yossi, v'tanakama de Rabbi Yossi, hainu Rabbi Shimon. And tanakama, brisa 1, equals the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. We may get to this result by explaining umay af, that what is actually meant by the term af that's used by both Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, akamaisa. They merely mean to add the additional vegetable mentioned to the first vegetable mentioned by the first opinion in each brisa. So here's how that would play out. The first opinion of brisa 1 said that the controversy was about whether pay applies to the leaves of turnips and cabbage. Rabbi Yossi comes along and says, also leeks. Gemara is now suggesting that the word also connects only with the first item mentioned by Tanakama, turnips. So that Rabbi Yossi is saying the controversy wasn't about turnips and cabbage, but about turnips and leeks. And then we'll say the same thing for brisa 2. First opinion of that brisa states the controversy was about turnips and leeks. So that's exactly equal to Rabbi Yossi of brisa 1. And in response to Tanakama, brisa 2, Rabbi Shimon says also cabbage. The word also, we're now suggesting, may possibly refer specifically to the first item that Tanakama mentioned, i.e. turnips. So Rabbi Shimon is saying to Tanakama, the controversy wasn't about turnips and leeks, but about turnips and cabbage, which is identical with Tanakama, brisa 1, so that it emerges that between the two brises, there are only two opinions. You have Tanakama, brisa 1, slash Rabbi Shimon, who hold that the controversy was about turnips and cabbage. Then you have Tanakama, brisa 2, slash Rabbi Yossi, who say the controversy was about the leaves of turnips and leeks.
You've been listening to RealClearDaf.com. Visit us online for resources or to dedicate a shiur. To speak with Rabbi Wise, call 855-ASK-RCD-1. That's 855-275-7231.